Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Veronica Reeves at the United Nations in New York. In this week's program, more work needs to be done on LGBT issues. And the UN works to empower women in Afghanistan. But first, the proportion of women and children arriving as refugees in Europe is increasing, the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, has said. Conflict and instability in Syria and Iraq, as well as a number of countries in Africa, has forced millions of people to flee their homes, a large number of whom are women. UNICEF's Christopher Tidy has been spending time in transit countries, including Greece, Serbia, and Croatia, as well as destination countries. Austria and Germany. Daniel Dickinson asked him how many women and children are now on the move.
The proportion of women and children among the new arrivals has actually increased over the past couple of months. So it's now upwards of about 52% women and children of people who are arriving every day, which is really quite an astounding figure when you think about it. And I think that that really runs counter to what in fact is a myth that the refugees and migrants are all men. A lot of people believe that, but that's obviously not the case. That's not what we're seeing every day.
And what's it like to be a woman migrant in this situation?
It's challenging, I think, especially for mothers, because, you know, we see a lot of single mothers traveling without their husbands or on their own and looking after kids by themselves, and that's obviously quite difficult for them. One particularly vulnerable group that we've seen are pregnant mothers, you know, women who are quite late along the sort of the stages of pregnancy. Because the journey is so difficult and so tiring, we are seeing a number of pregnant women who are coming in some sort of distress. I have met a number of mothers who unfortunately have lost babies along the way, so it's really challenging for them.
And are those expecting mothers getting the support they need?
The humanitarian community is doing as much as we can. The difficulty is that people do not want to stop. They want to keep moving. They don't want to be held back because they're fearful that if they're stuck somewhere, then they'll be sent back to the countries from which they came. And I think that in some situations, people are in fact putting their health at risk because they're not staying long enough to get the support that they need, which is a real concern.
Is it easier to find a final destination country for a woman and children if she's not traveling with a man?
Couldn't really speak to that. I mean, certainly what seems to happen definitely in transit and in destination countries is that women and children and families are prioritized in terms of the speed at which they're kind of brought through the official processes and so on. They're identified often as requiring sort of additional support, which I think is good and ultimately is to their benefit.
Progress has been made on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, or LGBT, issues, but more work remains to be done in the coming year. So says Charles Radcliffe of the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. I spoke to Mr. Radcliffe and asked him about his expectations for the year ahead with regard to LGBT issues.
It's always a mix of good news, bad news, and I think we've had a lot of good news in recent years, lots of progress, not only in Western countries, but in Latin America and in some other parts of the world. I think where we've seen a lot of that progress take place, and I'm thinking particularly of Latin America, North America, and Western Europe, I think the focus is going to be on consolidation and on closing the remaining gaps, the protection gaps, because it's not all about marriage. And in many of these countries, a lot more work still needs to be done, whether it's on transgender rights or whether it's the protection of children against bullying or banning so-called reparative therapies. There are all sorts of things that still need to be done. So I still expect to see a push on these issues. In many other parts of the world, of course, things are moving at a different pace. I think we'll see progress in some parts of Asia. We may see marriage in Taiwan. We may see civil partnerships in Thailand. We're still seeing discussion of anti-discrimination protections in many countries. And I think in other parts of the world where it's maybe been much more difficult and we've seen less progress, in Africa, in the Middle East, we're looking at different problems. In Africa, I think we still need to support activism. We need to build up and protect the activists. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done to make the community visible and better understood. And we need to be ready for the pushback that is inevitable whenever a community is asserting its rights. And in the Middle East, we've seen terrible violence, extremism focused on many vulnerable groups, including on people who are perceived to be gay. And the atrocities that have been carried out by some of the terrorist groups there have come to the attention of the UN Security Council for the first time, and we need to be very vigilant.
We know that LGBTI issues within businesses, it's becoming an issue that is gaining more attention. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect of the work?
I think thematically that may be one of the big stories of 2016. Business has really come to the table on this issue. It's striking to me for the first time ever this month at the World Economic Forum at Davos. LGBT inclusion will be on the formal agenda of the World Economic Forum for the first time. And we'll have multiple other events taking place around the forum, including events at which the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, High Commissioner Zaid, will be speaking. There's much more focus now, and some of the biggest companies in the world are really committing themselves to an agenda of LGBT inclusion. They're doing it because it's compliant with their values, but they're also doing it because it's a smart thing to do. There's a very strong business case for celebrating diversity and making sure that you tap the full potential of your workforce.
And how is this issue being translated into the work of the UN?
So we're talking with business and working with them to see what role they can play in making their own workplaces safer and better and fairer for LGBT people.
Finding practical solutions to the challenges that Afghan women face accessing education and health services was the focus of a day-long workshop held recently in the capital of Afghanistan, Kabul. Some 50 people took part in the event, including the principal of a girls' high school, who said many of her students do not get to finish their education due to early marriage. The workshop was organized by the UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, and it also looked at ways to increase women's overall participation in society. Hamid Halimi reports from Kabul.
Access to education and health services, increasing the role of women in society, these are just some of a few difficult areas for many women in Afghanistan. At the UN workshop, participants discussed some practical solutions to the problems Afghan women face. Kabul's Deputy Provincial Governor Mohibullah Mohibi said the province is committed to providing more opportunities for women to participate in decision-making, especially at the district level.
In each district, we have a council of the people, where we have representatives of all sectors and villages. This is a decision-making body at the district level. The needs of the people are prioritized by the members of the council. Unfortunately, the presence of women is insufficient in some districts. We don't have women members in some of the councils. We are trying to increase their presence in decision-making, program development, and implementations.
Kabul Provincial Council member Said Ayari said the workshop is a welcome opportunity to hear directly from women, and noted that coordination among relevant government and non-government organizations needs to be improved.
There are many activities but no coordination. We can get better results if we improve coordination of our activities. The Provincial Council fully supports this issue. Men and women have equal rights under the Afghan constitution, and they should benefit from this provision.
Wrapping up the workshop, the head of UNAMA Central Field Office, Gabriela Erebarna, reiterated UNAMA's commitment to the promotion of women's rights.
We will be following up some of these issues. Some of the issues we will address with district authorities, some of them directly with the governor's office, some of them with the specific line departments. We will not be able to bring change overnight, but we give you our commitment to continue this discussion and to, in fact, take this opportunity to meet, to continue talking to you in the coming years.
Since the fall of the Taliban regime in Afghanistan in 2001, there has been noted progress on women's rights in Afghanistan, compared to when women were totally excluded from society. There are, for example, 64 members of the parliament. The constitution sets down that there must be a minimum of 25% female representation. There are 4 women cabinet ministers and 1 provincial governor, and many women across the country are active in public life and have more opportunities. However, many women still face tremendous difficulties in their life in Afghanistan. The UN is committed to supporting their equal participation and full rule in their own country. Hamid Halimi reporting for the UN Radio, Kabul.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening. I'm Veronica Reeves.